Okay, we're good?
We're good, if you will read what the meeting is.
Okay. Mayor?
Yeah.
Mr. Budget Committee Chairman?
Okay.
Thank you for, yes.
Well, let's call this meeting to order, and who's, is anybody on the phone with us?
Well, so, just love it.
Oh, I love it.
I know, it looks like I'm on the wall, but...
So our CFO...
The sound was better that way.
Yeah.
I thought it was just a lovely picture.
Aw, she's sweet.
So just love it. And then for purposes of the record for the meeting, this Budget Committee meeting on Thursday, October 12th, at 11 a.m. at the WFRC offices, can we just go around and do introductions for the recording?
Okay, I'm Tom Dolan, Mayor of Sandy, and Chairman of the Budget Committee.
Karen Cronin, Mayor of Perry City, representing Box Elder County.
Ned Hacker with the Wasatch Front Regional Council, Director of Operations.
Mike Caldwell, Mayor of Ogden City.
Andrew Gruber with WFRC.
Andrea Pearson with WFRC.
And Lovett Baumgartner with WFRC.
Okay, the first order of business is to approve the minutes of May 11th, 2017, and July 7th of 2017. Do you have a motion?
Move to approve the minutes.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion?
Only that we don't have a quorum for voting yet. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to suggest that we take all the action items.
We'll hold that in abeyance until later. Do we have others?
Yes. So Commissioner Milburn is ready when we're ready to vote for me to call him.
Okay.
And then he's going to participate for voting.
Okay. With that, any public comment? Not seeing any members of the public here. We'll move on to item three. Budget Committee actions. Recommend approval of the Wasatch Front Regional Council personnel policy.
May I?
Yes.
Okay, thank you, Mayor.
Just speak up.
Okay. All right, so we have, you see on the agenda here, several items, including an update on the office move. If we want to go into closed session to talk about that, we can make that determination. That will be up to you all. I just want to let you know, given that we have only the three of you as members of the committee here today, and we have important items to discuss on the agenda, what I did in leading up to this is I touched base with other members of the Budget Committee. I had a discussion with Commissioner Milburn from Davis County this morning. Yesterday, I talked to Councilman Barber from Morgan County and Commissioner Milne from Tooele County. Went over everything on the agenda and all the materials, answered questions, and I will just tell you that they are all comfortable taking the actions that we have on the agenda today. So, and then as I said, Commissioner Milburn, when we let him know, I'll get in touch with him, give him a 5-minute warning, and then we can call him and he can participate so that we have a quorum for voting. Okay. We also made available to the other members of the Budget Committee who weren't able to be here today alternative options for talking. They didn't take us up on that, but it was just very important to me, given the nature of the items that we're talking about today, that we provide opportunities for all the members of the Budget Committee to really be able to look at this and ask questions if they have them. Okay.
So for...
Okay.
For item number three, looking at A, B, and C, and D, we'll again put those off to the have another member of the voting committee and move to item four.
Well, can I? Sorry, Mayor.
Go ahead.
Thank you very much. What I recommend doing is just I can walk through the substance of these items and then we can just hold the voting. Okay.
That's good.
Okay. Very good. So, the first two items are both policy items, okay? So WFRC policies. And what they reflect is our effort on an ongoing basis to do a proactive review of all of our internal policies to make sure that they are in full compliance with applicable laws and regulations and also best practices. So you may remember in January of 2014, we updated our articles of association and our bylaws. In October of 2015, we updated our accounting and administrative policies. And then over the course of the last year, we, in a combination of Lovett, myself, and Ned, have been working on updating our personnel policies. So we were already moving in that direction. Then, as you also may be aware, last summer, in June of 2017, in response to a request from the legislature, the Utah Office of the Legislative Auditor General released a report. This report, a review of best practices for internal control of limited purpose entities, which has an extensive, actually, checklist of best practices for all those entities. WFRC is such an entity, a special purpose unit of local government. So we took that full checklist and went over that very carefully. And so what we've got for you today, these two policies, the personnel policy and updates to the accounting and administrative policy, reflect that review that we initiated on our own, and then also all of that review from the Legislative Auditor General. On the personnel policy, starting there, what you have in front of you is a memo and then also the policy itself, okay? Now what we did, the first few steps on this personnel policy is, our first step was to actually codify, if you will, all of the personnel policies that the council has actually taken action on over the years. We have, over the course of literally more than 20 years, 30 years, the council has sort of on a piecemeal basis adopted elements of personnel policy direction to us. And so we thought that it would be very helpful to compile and codify all of that into one uniform policy so there was certainty and clarity about what our personnel policies are. So that was our first step, is compiling. We then reviewed and organized all of them into chapters, did formatting, clarifying with examples, and then we had the whole policy also reviewed by outside employment counsel to have an independent set of eyes on it and get recommendations from them to make sure that our personnel policies were fully compliant with the law. And so there were some additions needed for things like Family and Medical Leave Act, the Fair Labor Standards Act, like policies that we needed to make sure that we were complying with and included here. And then, as I said, also the recommendations from the Legislative Auditor General. All of those things together are reflected in the policy that's before you. In all of that, there's only two proposed modifications to benefits that we as staff are proposing to you to make. Otherwise, it is all cleanup and ensuring compliance with existing law. Those proposed modifications to the benefits, which are listed here in the memo. One, we right now have a funeral leave policy such that our employees, if there's an immediate family member who passes away, they can take up to 5 days to for funeral and family time. But that only happens after the family member passes away. And in our experience, it seemed that it would be helpful to have a little more flexibility and modify that to be so-called compassionate leave, so that if somebody needs to help with an immediate family member leading up to that family member's passing away, or even in the weeks before with help with medical care or whatever, that they would have a little more flexibility. So that it doesn't increase the number of days, it just gives a little more flexibility. Okay? That's the first. The second is, right now what we provide to our employees is a short-term disability policy where if our employees have a qualifying event, which includes maternity leave or recovering from surgical procedure, that they get two-thirds pay, a benefit of two-thirds pay, but they only get that after a two-week waiting period. And what we are proposing to do is add a benefit which is modest in terms of its financial impact, but we think important to employees, that we would provide two-thirds pay for that first 2 weeks so that they don't have a waiting period. In other words, if somebody, you know, has a baby, that they can start their maternity leave benefit at two-thirds pay from day one instead of waiting for 2 weeks. And the rationale for doing this is to try to make sure that we are providing benefits that are comparable to or competitive with the marketplace, And we've seen more and more move, for example, on maternity and paternity leave. Even the LDS Church, you know, just updated significantly its maternity and paternity leave policies. And we want to be able to make sure that we're attracting, you know, good employees, including those who are in that age, you know, the child family raising age. And so it's a relatively modest increase, but we think it makes sense to be competitive.
How many hours does an employee get for sick leave?
Love it.
Employees accrue 8 hours per month for sick leave, so a total of 96 hours per year.
Does that accumulate years or just what? It's use it or lose it?
It is a combination of use it or they will pay it out at the end, or you can use it for health insurance upon retirement, similar to the old UDOT policy.
Is there a maximum?
The maximum that anyone can have at any time, and that would be at the end of a fiscal year, assuming that they didn't use any and they had been here a number of years and, you know, accumulated at least 80 hours the prior year, would be 176 hours.
Okay.
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 So what you're proposing with this would not affect those hours. This would be in addition to?
Yes, so this wouldn't impact any of our other policies. It's just an add so that if there's and the way we've got it is an FMLA qualifying event, that they would be able to have 2 weeks at two-thirds pay, you know, from the beginning of that qualifying event before our existing short-term disability policy kicks in.
So right now, could they use sick leave during those first 2 weeks and get 100% pay?
If they had it, they could. Just a little background about where we came up with this number. You know, as Andrew pointed out, we have a short-term disability that covers maternity. And we looked into amending the policy to cover those first few weeks, but the cost was so prohibitive that we thought this might be a less expensive. I mean, because if you buy the policy, you have to buy it for everybody, people who won't even ever use it. So that's why it is for this 2 weeks. It was meant to cover maternity leave per se.
And so, but they could, if people have the sick time, they could use it for this period of time. And the notion is that the sick leave and vacation benefits we offer are available generally, and what we found is people would be in a situation, well, if I know I'm having a baby, for example, that they then try not to take sick leave or try to, you know, save up. And what we wanted to be able to do is not have a situation where they weren't able to utilize the benefits that are generally available because of that. And we wanted to say, yes, we do offer a maternity leave policy, a paternity leave policy that kicks in at day one. Does that make sense? Okay. So those are the two proposed benefit adjustments. Otherwise, I mean, we are happy to go over any of the details of the entire personnel policy. The one other thing I should note is that we would have liked to provide you with a redlined version so you could see, oh, well, these are the specific things that are changed. But because I said the nature of what we had was scattered policies all across, you know, decades of effort of council actions, when pulling them all together and then cleaning them all up, essentially it turned the entire thing into a red line. So that didn't really work. But what, again, I've characterized for you the changes that in cleanup that we've made, and then these are the only two proposed benefit modifications.
Okay, so any more questions on this policy?
Move on? Okay. Thank you. The next one is the WFRC accounting and administrative policy. Now, again, we adopted this policy in 2015, and then through subsequent review, we've identified a handful of additional measures that we think should be added to the policy. Now, let me note for this, when we put the main policy together, we had this reviewed by the state auditor, so Auditor Dougal's office, and we also had it reviewed by our cognizant funding agencies, Federal Highway Administration, and passing through UDOT. So again, important, we feel, to get external parties to take a review of the policies that we have in place. We are proposing a few modifications, 1, 2, 3, 4 modifications that are listed in the memo. Now, I should be clear, all of these things, we're basically doing all these things already, but what we didn't have is actual council-adopted policy that requires us to do these things. And so we thought it would be prudent to make sure that the council is directing us as an organization to do all of these things. So item number one, appointment of a treasurer and a clerk. So we already have a treasurer in having a budget committee with a budget committee chair. And we also functionally have a clerk already in having a CFO, a chief financial officer. We think it makes sense, however, to officially designate the budget committee chair as also the treasurer of the organization and the CFO as the clerk of the organization. And then it wouldn't be by individual, it would be by position classification, okay?
Just pay more?
In cake, yes. And so that would be, and then there are certain requirements associated with being treasurer and clerk. Some of those responsibilities by law can be delegated. And so if you agree with taking this approach, and if the council adopts this, then Mayor, we would work with you as the budget committee chair on reviewing potential delegation of some responsibilities, things that we're doing already or that Lovett is doing. Okay. So that's item number one. Item number two, addition of a records management and retention policy. Now, again, we are already fully complying with, you know, grandma and the applicable laws in that area, but we think it makes sense to add into our policy that we will comply with the laws in that area. That's item two. Item three, appointment of a staff person to act as a compliance administrator. Again, there are many laws and rules that we are required by virtue of our entity to comply with. The Legislative Auditor General recommends having a mechanism so that we can provide information to the council to certify, essentially, we are complying with all of those. And so the approach that we're proposing to take is appointing a compliance administrator, and we're suggesting that that person be Andrea. We wanted to call her the compliance officer and give her a badge that she could wear, but then she said, you know, you can just, you know, I don't want to be a law enforcement officer, right?
So admin's fine.
Okay. And the notion there, and this my suggestion, is that that appointment of having a compliance administrator would be made by the executive director in consultation with the chair of the council and the budget committee chair. And then Andrea would just keep a log of and make sure, well, here's all the laws we're supposed to comply with and track what we need to do, and then have that information available to report to the council to certify we're complying. Okay. Last item.
And it doesn't pay more either.
Cake also. is adding a statement on ethics to our policy. We are very proud of the organizational culture that we have for honesty and transparency and accountability. It's very, very important to us. But we actually realize that we don't have a statement in our policy. We will comply with the Government Ethics Act, etc. And so we feel, and the Legislative Auditor General in their checklist recommends adopting a statement on ethics. We think that's a great idea to put that into the policy as well. So those are the proposed additions to the accounting and administrative policy.
So any more clarification, any more questions?
Most of that come out of the auditor's office.
These items that are listed for the as the admin and accounting policy, yes.
Okay.
Most of the stuff in the personnel policy, just the cleanup, was separate from that. Okay.
I just didn't see a press conference from John Dougal saying he made those recommendations.
Okay, yeah, because that's not his office. Different auditor. Different auditor.
Okay.
We are trying very hard to avoid that.
Yeah. So if I understood right, we're doing this. There's no new creations of positions. It's just formalizing it.
That is correct. Yeah, so this is it's formalizing and having the council actually adopt that we will follow rules, have a treasurer, which is already the budget committee chair. Yeah. And I would just say that we love working with the state auditor's office. They have actually, so this review, the report comes from the Office of the Legislative Auditor General, different person than than Auditor Dugal's office. Auditor Dugal's office has been tremendously helpful,
very helpful.
In reviewing a lot of our policies. Lovett works very closely with them, and we welcome their involvement at any time.
I feel like it's a good idea to have friends in that office.
Of course it is.
So we're going to pay them in cake as well.
Position it in a way that they've recommended it. It makes them much smoother.
We've involved them in the process from the beginning.
Yeah.
So if they have any issues with our policy, we're going to say, here's an email where you said you were good on that. You signed off.
Right, right. Yeah.
That's not why. We really do want to do this right. So
the same folks that were looking and questioning actions for Mountain Accord and Central Wasatch Commission, same folks that we replied to at the auditor's office.
Okay, so that's it for items A and B on the policies. Okay, yeah. The last thing I would just say about that is, I want all of us as staff want, and I'm sure you as our leaders on the council want us to run this organization in a way that nobody has to worry about issues or ethics. You know, we want to run our organization in a way that we can be an open book, and if anybody ever has any questions, we are more than happy to answer those questions and to demonstrate that we are appropriately using public funds. And part of that is just being proactive in reviewing our policies, which is what we've done, and then having the council actually adopt and give us real direction. You must do these things also. So it's in that spirit that we're approaching all of this. Okay? Okay. Move on. Okay, so the next item is the recommendation to amend the budget, the FY18 budget and work program. In talking about this, there's a piece that relates to the office move. In my view, we don't have any need to close the meeting to talk about issues related to the office move. Okay, we put it on there in case you felt like, well, I'd rather talk about that in closed session just to give us the opportunity. What I would suggest is, as we talk about the budget, we can weave in the office move update, and we don't need to go to closed session. Is that okay with everybody?
I agree.
Okay. All right. So, on the budget, you'll remember that we're on a fiscal year, July through June budget, like the cities are. We adopt our budget in May. We close out our budget year at the end of June, and so now we have the end-of-year numbers from the end of FY17. It is our regular practice to do a budget amendment at the October council meeting to reflect what happened at the end of the last year. Many of our projects, the work we do, much of the work we do, carries over the course of years. You know, transportation planning efforts, some of the TLC projects that we have going in various communities, they will be budgeted in one year, but the work carries over multiple years. So it is routine for us to have the budgeted spending be at a level, it comes in a little lower, and then we increase the budget by the corresponding amount in the next year to reflect that carry forward. So the FY17 budget came in below the expected, below the budgeted amount by $939,000. And then so we have a sort of a corresponding proposed increase to the budget in FY18 to reflect that carry forward. So again, that is it is routine in that every year we go through that process. On all of these tables, there's a few other modest modifications with details in the footnotes about them, and we're happy to go over any of that. There are only two items which are actually new items for the budget. So this is now, I'm looking at the memo for 3C right now. The new items are $30,000 in additional state and local funding for staffing for the Morgan County Ogden Valley RPO. Planning organization. So this is something that we're already doing this for Tooele County. Morgan County and then the Ogden Valley have come to us and said, help us to set up an RPO to organize their transportation planning efforts. and they've put in resources. Weber County has put in some resources because it's Ogden Valley. And then also UDOT has federal funds that they can contribute to this effort. And Mayor Caldwell, you know, signed an agreement on behalf of the Wasatch Front Regional Council for this purpose. And so this amendment reflects the addition of that $30,000 in funds to do that, to help staff that.
So we have $30,000 coming in from different organizations. We're just adding it in so we can spend it.
Correct. Exactly. That is, so we've been joined by Tim Reese, our outside auditor, and he's going to be talking with us in a few minutes. So thank you, Tim. Have a piece of cake if you want a piece of cake. The other, similarly, is another add to the budget, and that is $50,000 from the Federal U.S. Economic Development Administration and or from our CDBG, Community Development Block Grant Funds, to conduct a feasibility study for creating a revolving loan fund for the Wasatch Front Economic Development District. Now, we're the only association of governments in the state, of the seven, that doesn't administer a revolving loan fund. And the folks in Morgan and Tooele County have said it would be helpful if you set up a modest revolving loan fund to make loans to private entities to help with economic development. This would be in the areas that the CDBG program, the so-called small city CDBG program that we administer, covers. So that would be the areas of Weber County other than Ogden, and it would be Morgan and Tooele. For Box Elder, the CDBG is actually covered by BRAG, Bear River Association of Governments. We're open to this idea, but given that this would be a new activity for us, where we would potentially be making loans to private entities, we want to proceed cautiously, which is why our recommended approach, and the folks in Tooele and Morgan support this, is to first do a feasibility analysis of how a program like this would operate, what the staffing implications would be. If this was going to be done, the notion would be that we would take a slice out of the CDBG monies that come to us already that we administer, and then use that to put in seed money to capitalize the revolving loan fund.
Do you know what that amount is that we get for CDBG?
We get just north of $600,000 per year, and the thought that we have a separate board that review, or committee that reviews and prioritizes the use of those funds, and they thought maybe we could seed this fund with $250,000. But again, first thing is for the budget, add $50,000 in to do the feasibility analysis. Okay.
So that revolving loan fund would be about $250,000.
I mean, potentially. That's the notion, but I think part of the feasibility study will be, what do you need to have how much money do you need in a revolving loan fund to make it worth the administrative effort of doing it? You know, so I think that's part of the question. Okay. So Lenise Davenport, who staffs our economic development district, would lead out on that. Okay. So, but again, to your point with the $30,000, this is not money we're taking out of our existing budget and moving it over. It represents new funding that would come in to do this. Okay. Okay. Now, to the office move, there are some implications of moving funds within the budget related to the office move. But before I get to that, let me just back up and give you all an update on where we're at on the office move. Okay.
You're smiling, so it must be really
good. It is good. It's good. It's good.
He's got to come up with a creative.
We're excited. Yeah. So as of course, there are two sides to this. The office move. Let me just say, Lovett, Ned, Andrea. I know this goes without saying, but if I'm going through this and you think I missed something that's important that the budget committee members should hear, please interrupt me. Okay. I mean, that should go without saying, but I just wanted to be clear that that's what I want you guys to do, please. Okay? There's two pieces to this. One is selling this building, and the other is moving into a new space, obviously. We have not had luck yet in selling this building. It has been on the market for 6 months-ish. That is reflective of the fact that the real estate market out here in the International Center is incredibly slow. Our brokers told us they believe that one building has sold in this area in all of 2017.
In a year.
So the market is very slow. So what we are proposing to do is to reduce the asking price for the building from $1.45 million to $1.35 million, and then go back out and do a renewed push. Now, that may have an impact on traffic. It may not. The good news is that the sale of this building, from a financial perspective, is really distinct from the office move into the new location. And we've done this very carefully and with input from you and from the council, because what we don't want to do is spend down the value of the asset we have here just for regular ongoing costs. And we also want to preserve the value of the asset that we have here to have the possibility in the future of buying a space, buying something that, and we may find some wonderful, remarkable deal with a partner or something at some point in the future. So the notion is that we sell this building, and this is, we have talked about this in detail as a budget committee before, so this is a little bit of just rehashing, but that we would take the proceeds of sale after paying the closing costs, deposit those funds into a dedicated interest-bearing building fund account to preserve that value and the possibility of buying in the future. Okay? So, whether we sell this building or own this building, from a budget perspective, from a financial perspective, we either have an asset that has value or we have money in the bank. It doesn't really matter for purposes of the budget and for our transactions going forward. We want to sell the building because there's risk associated with owning property. We'd rather have the money in the bank, but we also don't want to give this building away at a fire sale. You know, and this has been Lovett's advice, is better to hold on, because we don't need the money right away, hold on and sell at a reasonable price rather than drop it so low just to unload it. Okay?
Any thoughts of leasing?
Yeah, yes.
A lease question.
When you say leasing, do you mean leasing out this space to a renter? Mm-hmm. Yes, we have thought about that. We lean against that for a few reasons. One, if you have a renter in, it creates some inflexibility on the timing of being able to sell. One. Two, there's just administrative work associated with managing a lease. And we are trying to keep our lives relatively simple as possible, and not get into the business of being a landlord. And then also, we want to go and try as soon as possible and do a marketing push in between now and Thanksgiving, and really try to sell this place. I think that we may need to revisit that question. If we get to winter and we haven't sold it, we may need to say, let's revisit that. But our instinct right now is to try to keep it as straightforward as possible and just sell the building. Okay?
And we don't want to lose the tax-exempt status we have on this building by renting to somebody who is non-government.
Okay.
So you think by reducing the price, 1.35, mm-hmm. it might give a new breath of life to actually get some looking?
You know, it's possible, and this is what the brokers have recommended to us. It may not be such that the issue is as much a matter of price as just demand for buildings like this in this area. The speculation is that long term there is going to be a lot of demand for buildings like this. But at least by reducing the price, it gives us an opportunity, a rationale to go back out to the market and do a hard push. And it may hit some folks' triggers. You know, like in buying a home, you may have a level that you say, well, this is where I'm going to look. And dropping from 1.45 to 1.35 may get us some of those triggers and be able to bring some prospects in. Okay.
Didn't we have a pretty good prospect a couple months ago?
Yes. Not only did we have a prospect.
Sorry, I missed that.
No. I'm glad you said that, because I forgot to give you the update on that. We not only had a prospect, we had the building under contract.
Right.
For sale. The problem is that buyer, I'm doing air quotes for buyer, never took any steps beyond signing a contract. So never delivered earnest money, never displayed to us proof of funds to actually proceed, and we gave them every opportunity to move forward, and they didn't. So ultimately, we just had to cancel the contract for non-performance so that we could go forward and keep marketing the building. So that was frustrating. Yeah. Okay, sale. Moving on to the new space. Okay, this is where we're excited. We have, and again, much of this is refresher on stuff that we've talked about before. So I'll try to be succinct here. We have identified a space at the north end of the gateway that is owned by the Cicero Group. Randy Shumway, some of you, I expect, know Randy. And Mayor Caldwell, you and Commissioner Milburn, as the chair and vice chair, toured the space at the north end of the gateway. And we have negotiated with them a lease, a five-year lease with an option to renew for another 5 years at $2,250 per square foot. And the square footage is in the range of 12,600, so it's actually a little smaller than the offices that we have here. One of the really good things is that it's $2,250 a square foot with a 3% inflation, and we were able to negotiate that inflation rate would hold not just for the first 5 years, but also if we renew for the second 5 years, which gives us budget stability and predictability over a 10-year period. Particularly in a market in that area which is taking off. So we expect the values are going to go up there, and I think this deal will look better and better over time given that. Also, for tenant improvements that are rolled into the lease, they agreed to have those costs be amortized over 10 years. Even if we leave after five, we don't have to pay, you know, the balloon payment. It's over 10 years with no inflation. So it's essentially like a 0% loan to do the building improvements, which is unusual. So that's another really good term. We have been going back and forth on the lease with them in a lot of detail, and I'm very happy to say, and I already told this to Mayor Caldwell, we actually have a lease for execution for Mayor Caldwell to sign after this meeting, pending any comments that you may have. You may remember that we took to the council a resolution authorizing the chair to execute documents related to the building in consultation with the budget committee. Okay? I'm not sure what else I need to say about the space there. The idea is we sign the lease, and then we would enter into the process of hiring an architect and construction company. Ned has been with a team interviewing architects, and we have a recommended architectural firm to hire, but we haven't done that yet because we wanted to have this discussion with you first. And then the construction, and then probably looking at a move-in March, April time frame, right, Ned?
Yes.
And we just we're super excited about the space. It is so great. I've told you all this before, so I'm going to resist, you know, gushing about how excited we are about the location and all the benefits it offers in terms of its design and its location and everything, but we think it's going to be great.
What are the opportunities for parking there?
Yeah. Okay. This is one of our key issues about making sure that access was easy. Okay. So for you, for example, your commute time to WFRC would be reduced a hair. You'd get off at 6 North, go to 4th West, and then there's a dedicated parking garage specifically for this building that we're in. So it's at the north end of the gateway, but you don't go into gateway parking. There's a specific dedicated parking, and we're going to have, how many spots are we? Around 30? Okay. Dedicated spots for staff and visitors, and then additional overflow parking. So you go right in, there's an elevator, it takes you up two stories, and you walk into our office, essentially. Okay, so the parking will be really easy, and there'll be dedicated spots and validation for our visitors. There's also unparalleled access to Front Runner and tracks. The North Temple Front Runner track stations are right there. I mean, like, with a strong arm, a stone's throw away from the office. And it's easy to bike there, and there's bike share, and so it provides the opportunity for people to easily drive or take transit or bike or walk, which, hey, that sounds familiar. It sounds like our mission, kind of. So it, you know, it reflects that. So does that...
Yeah, that was going to be my follow-up, is how close was it to the other transportation sources?
Right.
So we've got that. And then the follow-up to that is, how long are we... Is it not a budget problem to have this building here that
yeah.
is unsold while leasing new space?
Yeah, let me answer that, and Lovett, please fill in. The answer is, it's not a problem. Because we have budgeted carefully for the costs associated with the new space and can absorb them within our budget. And this building right here, our ongoing costs, if we hold it, are very minimal. Just the basic maintenance and upkeep of the building. Okay, so love it.
So we don't have like, hey, we really need to sell it within a 2-year period.
What's
the time that we
Yeah, good. That's good. Because what I'm remembering that I should remind you of is that we last year took the action to pay off the remaining balance on our mortgage.
Right.
So we are debt free on this building. So the only costs that we have associated with this building are routine maintenance costs, okay? And the costs associated with the new leased space, the rent costs, and then the initial cost for furnishing and equipping the office, which is actually what you see in the budget here, and then the ongoing lease costs, we have budgeted for already and are not dependent on the sale of this building, okay?
In theory, we could hold on to this building for 5 years and it wouldn't be a problem as part of the budget.
Lovett, do you want to answer that or fill in?
You could. Once it becomes an idle asset, we don't recognize depreciation on it any longer. It's, as Andrew said, just keeping the systems up and running. You don't want to let those deteriorate. We have some obligation to keep the landscape up, but it's pretty minor, and we did some calculations on it. It'll be easily absorbed into the budget as our regular building operating expenses. So,
in a way, that's a good and a bad thing, because it's good that it doesn't play in right now, but it could be a hard sell if the cities are putting in money and saying, hey, they have enough money, they can just let $1.3 million assets sit without needing that money. At least in my budget, if I have that much money sitting, I get a lot of questions about if you don't need that money, why do you keep taking in more money? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting point. I get the way that I look at it, and welcome your input on this, is the feedback that we got from having these conversations with you as a budget committee, and then also from the council, is that the value we've built up in this asset should be preserved potentially to buy an office in the future. And so that's why we it's not that we need or don't need it, but that we would want to dedicate those resources potentially to purchasing at some point in the future. And that is distinct from the ongoing operating costs of the agency for staffing and for doing our projects.
Over time, this should be an appreciating asset. I don't think that it may be difficult to sell, lease whatever it is in this area right now, but as the prison and the development in the Northwest Quadrant continue to happen, property values are going to change dramatically. Depends on how long, but I don't see it as a depreciating asset. I see it as inflation will catch up to us.
Equities kind of one-time money. Your ongoing, everyday, operational, annual operations money is different. This is just equity in an asset they've lived in for a while. We thought it would be important to protect that. It's not something I think you'd want to loan to your general fund and get carved up. So I see it as a completely different pool of money than just the regular ongoing operating expenses. So that's how I see it.
And I don't think it will depreciate. I think it will increase. I'm just thinking of if we're trying to make sure that all of the contributing cities and partners
that we are showing that we're running a really tight ship, and if we have an asset out here for $1.35 million,
yeah,
they might say, well, that's a lot of savings to have. And I get that you're saying, well, eventually we may want to buy a building. Right now we're just leasing.
Right.
It just might be a little bit. I know up in my area there will be questions. So I just wanted to bring it to the table.
Yeah, I mean, you know, an approach could be, well, let's sell the building and then give, you know, contribution holidays. So, you know, Weber County doesn't have to put in, what is the amount? We have it right in here. So like the annual contributions, Weber County doesn't have to put in $66,000, you know, per year. Like, we could do that. And then at the end of whatever time that money ran out, we'd have to reestablish contributions, and then we would have essentially, you know, given away the entire value of an asset that the organization, you know, with all of its funders has built up over the course of 20 whatever years. I know you're not suggesting that.
Oh, no.
You're just raising, like, I'm trying to think, like, what's the, how to give an adequate response to that, you know, that concern. You know.
It was my understanding that we were trying to sell this so that we could use the capital built up in this to help with the move, which is, you know, I think that is a very viable sell.
Yeah.
So maybe I misunderstood that we weren't going to use the capital built up in this to help with the move and the new cost for another building.
Yeah. Well, we would, if we were going to buy a new building, the only way that we would be able to do that would be to do exactly what you're talking about. With leasing, we don't have to do that. And in part, the what we felt is what we were getting feedback from folks that we shouldn't reduce the value that this organization has from owning this asset. We shouldn't take that and then roll that over into something else. We should preserve that that value as much as possible. And then the costs associated with us moving into a leased facility, and then also, I should say, and this actually gets back to what's in the budget here, the costs associated with furnishing and equipping the new space. What we're doing basically over time is taking a slice of the funds that we get, that our region gets in federal funding, and directing that to cover the majority of our housing costs going forward, our lease costs going forward. So we talked about this in detail at the last budget committee meeting. The approach that we're proposing to take to help us cover those ongoing lease costs, based on what you guys have already budgeted and then are now having the final numbers on the lease, would take the percentage of those federal funds that we're getting in for our region from 2.9% to 3.2% of those federal funds that we're getting in to use to put towards administrative expenses, including the lease. So there has been an increase in funding from the last federal authorization of funding coming into our region. The majority of that is being used to do projects around the region, and that enables us to take a small slice out of that, again, from 2.9 to 3.2% of those funds coming in, and use them to cover some of these lease costs, housing costs. And so it's not tied directly to the contribution as much as it's tied to the increase in the federal funding, which enables us to make this move, and then also preserve the value that we've accumulated over time in the capital asset.
So what is the plan as far as preserving the value? What do you see long range for using that and going out and maybe getting a dedicated facility? How long are you looking at leasing?
5 years or 10 years. So the lease term is a 5-year term, so with an option to extend for another 5 years.
So the 5 years are locked in. If we found a really smoking deal in the building, we're locked in for the 5 years.
Well, sort of.
No. You're saying yes, you're saying no.
Go ahead.
There's a contingency in the lease that says we can get out of the lease with finding somebody else to lease the property.
Sublease.
Yeah.
So is there a deal shoulder
penalty? Do they have a penalty assessed?
No penalty in here, other than they would, the subleasee would have to pay the same amount that we're doing.
Yeah, so there's if we just walked, if we were like, hey, 2 years we're out of here, 7 years we're out of here, then we'd be in breach of the lease, and then that would, then the landlord, Cicero Group, could essentially say to us, well, you still have to pay.
Right.
The, you know, the rain, but as Ned said, this is why I said yes and no, as Ned said, we have the ability to sublease without penalty. So it gives us a degree of flexibility.
In that area where this office space is going to be, wasn't it $1 billion the economic investment is going in right now? So as that starts to mature, I can see Cicero saying, hey, we got WFRC on our backup here. We can get double the lease space or leases for that space. And so I think there's every chance that that might happen in 5 to 10 years as those values start to really settle in and that demand.
We are honestly saying to Cicero Group that our intent is to be here for 5 years and then potentially for 10 years. But we like the fact that we think the space is very attractive, will continue to be and even be more attractive, and so we're going to be able to keep our eyes open and have a degree of flexibility that if that right offer does come along to buy, we'll be in a position to have preserved the assets and be able to move on that without hurting the finances of the organization.
$2,250 a foot is a reasonable price for downtown office space. Most of it's going for $35 to $42.
Yeah.
So
in the fund that we're holding, any proceeds from the sale of this building will not be earmarked only for another facility, or are those? Could those funds be utilized any way that the
intent was that they would be held in a building, a restricted account for a building purchase?
Okay, so is it just an intent, or if the full board votes otherwise, could the money be utilized? I just want to make sure if that's the intent that someone
love it. Do you want to respond to that?
The board would have to vote on how we would spend that. You know, it's not like, I mean, if your question is, can staff just say, oh, we need some of that money, we'll spend it? Is that your question? Or
no, I knew the board would, but I mean, okay, if we're holding it for that, I would think that it was somewhat tightly earmarked.
So what I think our thought is, and we have not set that account up yet, you know, because we haven't had the need to, unfortunately, but our intent, based on our discussions, has been that we will set it up as a dedicated, a special purpose account, deposit the proceeds in there, and then Lovett, correct me if I'm wrong, when we get those proceeds in, that itself is going to require an amendment to the budget to reflect those resources coming in, right?
I don't think so.
Okay.
It wouldn't, would it, Tim?
The money comes from the sale of this building.
You've got to put it somewhere.
You got to bring it in
somewhere. Well, yeah, I guess your amendment would be to set it up in a fund of its own, but you're exchanging one asset for another. That's not technically...
Okay, because we wouldn't be budgeting to spend it.
Right.
We would be in some way, and we'll work the details out, okay? But in some way, to your point, what your point is, we share that view and intent. That's what we're, based on our conversations with you all, that we would get the money in, that the budget committee would review this, and the council would enact in some appropriate way to say, here's what we're doing with this money. It is dedicated for building purchase, and it's held there. Now, technically, the council has the ability as an entity to change that at some point in the future. Legally, that could happen, but if we set it up as a dedicated account and that intent is very clear, we would treat it as such. Okay?
I like the concept that we talked about a while ago. It's unlikely that we'll ever have the money to buy our own quote-unquote building.
Yeah.
But there will be buildings built that will be condominiumized, and we can buy space in that. That's part of the future that's coming, okay?
Yeah, instead of like just a standalone building.
Yeah, I don't think you can. Where are you going to build a standalone building in downtown Salt Lake?
Right.
If that is the permanent location, which may be the most logical, but you know, the concept of building, being part of a project that's being built is, I think it's a good idea.
Okay. Get a floor or something.
Yeah. Whatever space is needed by that piece.
So in the budget here, what the actions that you see proposed related to this in the FY18 budget are moving funds that are otherwise carried forward special funds into the general fund in order to enable us to spend resources that are already in the budget and use them for the furnishing and equipping of the new office space. So the capital outlay for furniture and equipment, which then would be recovered over 3 to 5 years as depreciation. Okay, so what we have to do, we have the resources to do it, but we have to move the funds within the budget to authorize us to make those expenditures and then again recoup through depreciation over 3 to 5 years. So that's what's reflected in the budget. Right?
It is. Now, and depreciation in this sense is it's charging rent to the programs that we work on. They see it as an equipment rental.
Okay.
It's equivalent to depreciation on the asset itself.
So. Okay. So that's what's reflected in the budget this year. Now, the next year going forward, what I already talked about, and again, this was the subject of an extensive discussion that we had at the last budget committee meeting, is that we would take an additional $100,000 in the STP funds. These are the federal funds that come into our region. And with that additional, we'd be able to cover the full costs of the new leased space. And that additional $100,000, that's what translates into having our administrative share of those funds that come to our region go from the 2.9 to the 3.2%. Okay? So there's no action related to that here, but I'm just reminding you that that's what we had talked about at the last meeting. Okay? Okay. So that's all we've got on the budget and also on the office move, unless I'm forgetting something that we wanted to cover on this.
So we want to move on to the audit report.
Yeah. Is that good? Everybody good? Okay. Okay. So... Tim, we have the audit report which was sent out to you on Tuesday that Tim prepared working with Lovett. I want to give Commissioner Milburn a heads up about when we might call him. So would it be fair, it's 12:19 right now? Do we think I would tell him like in about 10 minutes? Does that sound about right? Lovett? Yes? Okay. All right. So, Lovett, I'll turn it either to you or to Tim to talk about this.
Well, let's let Tim talk.
Okay.
Hello, Lovett. Well, that's a draft of the audit. You notice we did some things this year. We put some more pictures and graphs in, and Lovett's idea. I think it actually everything pretty much. Put your mission statement in, and when we issue opinion on financial statements, we're issuing several opinions. We're issuing one on the financial statements as a whole. We're also issuing opinion on the government funds, the Department of Transportation. They were spent appropriately. We also issue opinion on the state compliance. And this year we didn't have any exceptions with state compliance. Didn't have exceptions with the federal audit, and you got an unqualified opinion on the audit. Just some interesting things on the graphs. You go to page 3. You notice that we did a growth graph that shows the growth over the years, and the last 2 years have been quite a bit of growth in the organization. So that's kind of nice to see over time what's going on.
Mostly due to the TLC program, the expansion of the TLC program and the Mountain Accord.
And the other one on page 4, that graph shows the revenues that come in. What percentage comes from what? You notice that the Department of Transportation is a huge chunk of your revenues. Accountants would call that a concentration, where you have a lot of money coming in from one source and you depend on it. So that's kind of shows it in the graph there, how much is coming in.
This is an issue we've talked about a lot over time, and you know, continues to exist as a fundamental concern that I have about the nature of the organization, that it is so highly reliant on one funding source, i.e. federal funding. We have to some extent diversified over time, and you know, you all led an effort to look at the long-term financial stability of the organization that led to us having our financial contributions from the state doubled several years ago, and also having increases to the contributions made by local governments, the counties, or in the case of Mayor Box Elder County, the cities in the county, you know, which are in the grand scheme of things relatively modest funding amounts, but are helpful in terms of our overall diversification of our revenues.
So anyway, that kind of brings it out, just kind of graphic figures, little things. The next one on page 7 just kind of shows revenues and expenses from 2016 to 17. You know, they look quite a bit of change, but in actuality, it's only about 500,000, which is the way the graph reads, but that's just kind of interesting. We didn't have any problems doing the audit. We didn't have any disagreements with management. They were very helpful and supplied the stuff we needed. There's nothing they didn't. We asked for, they didn't give us. We looked through a lot of your federal money, because that's an area that is always a concern for audits. But we did look at a sample of all expenses, making sure that they went to program. And Lovett does a good job of putting those in a ledger format that we can go through and see which programs you're spending on. And that's a good thing, because not too many people do that for us, but that works out well for us. We do it according to general auditing principles, as required by the state of Utah. We do it according to their guidelines, as we issue state opinions and things like that. Last year we had some minutes that were not posted. This year they're all, we made sure they're all posted, and that was
That reflected the transition. Now we've got Andrea on the job, and she's doing a great job of making sure that we're doing all of our minutes and recordings, and you know, fully compliant with all the Open Meetings Act and GRAMA.
And as we look at the GRAMA, the minutes, the meetings, and the new laws that are coming up, the state auditor has been busy. It makes us busy when he's busy. So. Are there any concerns or questions for us as auditors? Anything you have that you want us to address?
So there were zero findings? Okay.
You what?
There were zero findings, I take it?
No, we didn't have any findings this year. Okay. We had last year, not this year. Lovett, you want to talk about some things or add some things there?
I don't have anything to add. I just want to say I appreciate the opportunity for working with Wasatch Front, and we have a good crew. We have, Andrea has come on board and done a fantastic job in making sure we're complying with a lot of things. Tim beats us with a stick if we don't, so we don't like that. We want to do it right before he gets there.
I want cake.
She gets cake. We're going to pay Tim in cake, too. I haven't told him that yet, but so we let that be a surprise. Never mind. I don't have anything to add.
No findings. I don't have any questions, but would give congratulations. I've been on a few boards where that has not been the case, and it's very important. So appreciate you guys being in front of us.
That's especially really good for federal money, because if you're going to find some, it's going to be there. Mm-hmm. We have some funding rules, and Lovett keeps up on that, and we keep up on it. She may be hard on people at times because they're trying to comply, but that's her job in the life.
I'm trying.
Yeah, and life has gotten...
Daughter's job a lot easier when she's hard on people.
Life has gotten more complicated over the years, even since I've been here, and different requirements, and we have multiple funding sources and have to comply with those, all of those requirements. So I would just note, not really for discussion now, that eventually Lovett is going to retire. Hopefully not for... I'll try to work on her and keep her as long as possible, but one of our long-term issues as an organization that we need to plan for is succession planning for Lovett's very important position. And so I just want you all to know that that's something that we're starting to think about. Lovett, I hope you don't mind my saying this, but we're starting to think about and talk about because we want to be well out in front of that issue.
And I gave him my 2 years' notice, so...
Literally. So
I heard 10.
Yeah. 10, right. Let the record show 10.
Yeah. There was a translation.
That's,
like that.
That's a vital replacement, too. That's really a vital replacement. Makes a lot of difference, you
know. No, I echo Mayor Caldwell's remarks that it's really good to have zero audit findings, and so commend to staff and love it and appreciate all you guys do.
And as the quote-unquote treasurer,
we're going to make you look good, Mayor. Don't worry.
Somebody has to.
So, Mayor, I think that was item 3D. We already talked about the office move. So I don't think we have any. We as staff have anything else to review with you. Okay. Love it. Is there anything else?
No, I think we've got it covered.
Okay, Ned, Andrea, anything else? Okay. I'll get Commissioner Milburn on the phone, okay, and then we can do the votorama.
Yeah, so there will be action on item 1, the minutes, 3A, 3B, 3C, and 3D.
Thanks, Tim.
While he's pulling that up.
Hi there. Are you good? You good now to talk for a few minutes?
Modifications.
Okay, I'm going to put you on speaker on my cell phone, and then we'll do the votorama. Okay. Hold on one second.
The 2 week waiting period. That's going to be within budget. That's no new money requested for that.
Okay, Commissioner Milburn.
Yes.
Okay, great. So
before you start, Andrew, can I just say happy birthday to Mayor Dolan?
I'm glad everybody else is so happy about the birthday. I have them. I don't celebrate them like I used to.
And I'm sorry I'm missing the celebration of the birthday cake.
Oh, there's a big party. Your hats and horns and everything.
Hey, Mayor, you know, the big 4-0 only comes around once.
That's right.
So,
I thought for sure we could really celebrate. Why aren't we celebrating in just Sweden the Real Gators?
It looks like that'll be next year. Huh?
So, Commissioner, we've got Mayor's. I already told you that we had spoken previously with some of our county folks, and we have Mayors Dolan and Cronin and Caldwell here with us today, in addition to Lovett, Ned, Andrea, and myself. We've gone through the entire agenda and talked about all the items. Mayor Cronin was just raising one additional question, I think, though, Mayor.
I just wanted to clarify on the proposed modification to the benefits, the second one, about the short-term disability time frame.
Yeah.
That is a request, but it's within budget. There's no needed budget.
Yeah, that's right. So providing the additional 2 weeks at two-thirds pay option is within budget. And if you think about it, Lovett can correct me if I'm wrong here, but if you think about it, basically we're saying to an employee, we're not going to pay you more. We're saying you can not be here for that period of time, and we'll keep paying you two-thirds of your pay. So basically, it doesn't increase our budget. It just means that they are able to not work and still receive compensation. Now, in theory, there's a way that if they didn't use some sick time that they might have otherwise used, and then at some point in the future they have more sick time to pay out, there's a potential tail budget of budgetary impacts, but they would be very, very modest, and we believe it could be absorbed within the existing budgets even in the future. So that change for the FY18 budget has zero budgetary impact. Okay.
Okay, we're ready for some motions. We'll go back to item one, and that will be for the approval of the May 11th and July 7th, 2017 minutes. I have a motion.
Move to approve.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Unanimous. Moving to item three now. Action items recommended for approval. The first is the Wasatch Front Regional Council personnel policy, which we have reviewed. Any more questions on that personnel policy? Seeing none, then entertain a motion to approve.
Move to approve.
Second. Okay, we have a motion and a second, and we'll call for the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Unanimous again. Recommends for the approval of the Wasatch Front Regional Council of County and Administrative Policy, again, which was reviewed earlier in our meeting. Any more questions on that? Comments?
Move to approve.
We have a motion to approve.
A second.
And a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Next is the recommendation for approval of the year 2018 budget and work program amendments. Any more discussion? A motion? I make a motion to approve that.
Second.
And a second. So any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Again, unanimous. And review of the audit report for fiscal year 2017, which we reviewed just recently. Any more questions on the audit? Thank you for the audit committee that's and Lovett for her work on this. It's great to have no findings, just what you want to see, and especially in an organization as large as this. Motion to approve.
Do you need a motion?
Well, technically, no. We don't need to actually approve
it.
So it would be, it should be, it's essentially an informal action as a recommendation to send it on to the full council. So that's why it's not listed as an action item. So I would, this would be, I think I would, we would regard this not as an official action of the budget committee, but it, getting consensus that you want to move forward and have this shared
budget. We're ready to place it on the agenda.
Yeah.
I would say that we are ready and we're excited to move it forward, especially with the zero findings.
Okay. Take that as a a motion.
Yep.
And a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Again, unanimous. I believe that's our business for today.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. The only other thing, Mayor, I would just ask. So that concludes all the action. Thank you very much.
Executive report?
Are you? No, no. Unless I should, we could stay. We can talk. I mean, eat lunches at least. But question at the council meeting, which is not next week, right? It's the following week, Thursday the 26th at 2:00. So these, all four of these budget committee items are on the council agenda. Do you have that? Do we have that?
I don't have that.
Okay. And my question for you is, how much time do you want to spend on these items at the council meeting? I mean, it's always like this balance, like, you know, you want people to know and to understand, but I imagine we don't want to spend an hour. So,
can I? I hate to jump off, but I got to get back to my meetings. And if I might, so excuse myself.
Well, thank you.
It's just the cost of lunch sometimes, Commissioner.
All right.
Thanks a lot, Commissioner.
Thank you.
Appreciate
thank you.
It.
Bye bye.
All right. Bye.
Okay.
It is a balancing act.
Mm-hmm.
Probably all of us feel it as we set our agendas. Some things you think they're going to take 2 minutes and they end up taking a half hour, and some minutes you have budget time for 15 minutes and they take two.
Yes, fine.
Yes. I think if the members of the council would read the outlines copies, then we would be okay. Mm-hmm. But I think we can answer any questions that need to be answered. And I could always refer to you.
Okay. Yes, you can.
I don't think this is going to take forever. I mean,
yeah.
You've got a clean audit report. You've got a couple of policy changes that I think can be explained. And, you know, then you've got the accounting and you know, budget, all those kinds of things. Historically, they've depended on the budget committee to, to review this. So.
One of the things that, and you may remember this, that, that we've talked about over the years, at least since I've been here, is and some of the members had had a sentiment, had a feeling that that there wasn't enough information presented to them at the council meeting. It was always in the material was always in the the information was always in the material sent out ahead of time. But there was a feeling from, and some folks expressed this to me, that we were kind of rushing through it in the council meeting. So my feeling has been, and Mayor Dolan, you've been doing this as budget committee chair, is giving an opportunity to have a few minutes of presentation and create an opportunity for questions. Not an hour, you know, but a few minutes on each
Well, that's the responsibility of the chair to keep control of the meeting.
That's true.
You gavel, I'll bring it.
So, I mean, I think I would recommend that we do that. We take whatever you know we have to figure it out. You know, 20 minutes,
5 minutes
For the budget committee, because I feel like these are, even though none of them are controversial, they're all pretty straightforward, and I feel really good about everything we're doing, and you guys do too, apparently. They're still important. So does that work for you?
Sure. I think there's more discussion on the move than anything else that we'll discuss. I think people are anxious to know where we're
going. What's going on. Okay.
What's going on.
Okay.
I think, I would imagine 10, 15 minutes. And I'd talk about this a little bit. I think in the front of this, you said your policy changes and some of the, I don't know that accounting and administrative policy, there's going to be much there, but the policy changes that we're talking about, those came as a recommendation from an outside agency that reviews your internal policies, and they came and said, here's one minor tweak that I think you guys should consider, and so you brought that to the budget committee, and we agreed with that minor tweak, thinking, that's good. It's not something you guys kind of self-created or anything else. It was a recommendation that came to you that you pushed forward to, to the budget committee.
So. Yeah, I think it is, it's, as a combo, it's one, we've got, we are taking the recommendations from outside folks, and two, it's us being proactive to identify what the best policies are.
Like 10, 15 minutes, I don't cover all of that easily.
If you don't, well, I think that, 10, 15 minutes. If you want to take 20, if there's not questions, you can always sing and dance about the audit. I mean, not very many audits come back with zero findings, so you can.
I just want to say that pretty much we have for the last 23 years.
Yeah, last year.
One finding in 23 years, and it was about minutes being posted during a personnel transition.
Yeah, so we missed posting minutes for one thing, and we got one finding on it, and it broke our perfect record, but we're back again with no findings. So
I was just making the point. If you didn't use all your time,
talk about that. Okay.
Take it up in the
so Lovett, that tells me you got another 23 years to make up for it.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm not going to live that long, Mayor. My eyesight's failing. This whole body's falling apart, man.
And Lovett is we're going to have Tim there to answer questions and not to do a presentation.
I think it's up to you, but maybe he could maybe not go in so much to the graphs. I think he was trying to make it exciting to you guys, but maybe just hit page 44 and call it a day. We want y'all to look at it, so we thought a little color would make it easy. But we get that you guys really only care about that.
You've worked with elected officials for a long time. Lots of pictures.
I have worked in
fewer words, right?
I worked in SEC accounting for a while, and it's the same thing there.
Well, again, everything is said in the opinions. That's what you look for.
Okay. So got it. So I think that's it for us.
Okay. I make a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor? Hey, we're out of here.
Okay. Great. Thank you.